right.
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. We'd like to start the meeting today. And Jamie, could you start us off with the roll, please?
Yeah. 1 second. Sorry. One more email to respond to. Okay. Commissioner Briceño?
Here.
Commissioner Buck?
I'm here.
Commissioner Dobie? I don't see her. Commissioner Faruqi?
Here.
Commissioner Kent?
Here.
Commissioner Leach?
Here.
Commissioner Lee?
Here.
Commissioner Matsuba?
Here.
Commissioner O'Neill? Commissioner Steinberg?
Here.
And Commissioner Wang? You're muted, Commissioner Wang. I see her, but she's muted. Maybe she stepped away, but I can answer her later. Okay.
Thank you. All right.
Okay. Next, we have our open forum for our public comment. So if you wish to speak, please hit *9 or the hand raise icon on the Zoom app. You will have 3 minutes, and I will let you know when your time is up. The first person is Felicity Figueroa. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you so much. I was hoping our Attorney General Bonta would be here because we didn't have the opportunity to thank him last month for a lot of the good work he's been doing. But we'll hold off on that for now. So I would just like to have a message to the commissioners in light of your commission statement denouncing Hayden as a member, myself, of the Executive Committee of the Orange County NAACP chapter. I'd like to read to you the official OC NAACP statement on last month's racist incident at Laguna Hills High. Quote, recently, the disturbing video of a high school basketball player being taunted with loud, negative, boisterous racial slurs engulfed the airwaves and left Orange County residents riveted in disbelief, sadness, and anger. Then to discover that much of the foul language toward the black teen was coming from the very adults responsible for overseeing the event was baffling beyond belief. Our prayers go out to Makai Brown, his parents, and the entire Brown family. They probably felt there was little recourse in reassuring their son and acquiring accountability for this painful experience. The Orange County NAACP fully rebukes the inexcusable behavior of those responsible for this assault on Makai Brown. Hatred can never be allowed to stand. It must be met with swift action and the full measure of the law. We stand with the Browns in seeking that measure of justice on which our Constitution was founded. We support the heartwarming actions from local nonprofit organizations, the city of Irvine, and local business leaders who informed the Browns that they were not alone. Their efforts are an example of how a community comes together in times of trouble, recognizing first that we are one community. We are striving for the same ideals of raising our families in an environment that is safe and respectful for everyone in Orange County. Unquote. Let's hope your commission statement, together with the work of groups like the OC and NAACP and so many others, can finally make real strides towards achieving an Orange County community that consistently practices respect and compassion towards all its members, no exceptions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Felicity. Appreciate it.
Okay. The next speaker we have is Pat Davis. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you. Good morning. I'm outside where it's windy. I hope you can hear me. There's construction going on in my house, and this is a little less intrusive. Anyway, good morning, and I am certainly curious to hear how your initiative goes forward in terms of the statement that you've issued. I have grandchildren who play sports in Fullerton and club as well, and I often find myself aghast at the skill set that coaches exhibit at times like that. So I would just love to see more of a target there. It leaves, in this case, the girls trying to figure out how to explain what they were just told, and most are young folks of color, and that's quite concerning. And I wasn't sure if you're aware of the racial equity roadmap that the county has now initiated, looking at the HMIS system and the ways in which unhoused folks are treated equitably or otherwise, and we who are on the street have suspicions about who who gets possibly better services, more enlightened services. My hopes are there will be some personal skills included. The first meeting was delightful and hard, but it opened the door to workers to talk about some of their own issues around working in a very diverse situation without necessarily experience, training, or support to possibly speak up when issues are going on. So, another piece, as you know, I'm into all the unhoused stuff. I am sure you're aware that 46 people again died in January. That's the highest number yet, which is just unbelievable. And we now see that the sheriff coroner will be overseeing issues with technical input as to why people are dying, and the question being if anything was preventable. My concern that all of us watch for what narrative is run out on that inspection, because of course drugs and alcohol and mental health can be a death sentence, but what can we do to insert ourselves prior to that street life and where that goes? Judge Carter's all up in it, but that doesn't mean we still don't need to keep our eyes and ears open. And finally, I do hope as you look forward in COVID that you'll always have a hybrid virtual option to your meetings. I think it does help participation, although I long for just sitting in a nice room in a nice comfortable chair and being closer to many of your smiling faces. So again, thank you for your work.
Thank you. If anybody,
thank you so much, Pat.
Hold on a second. If anybody else wishes to speak, please hit star 9 or the hand raise icon. This is your one opportunity. We have no additional requests to speak. Okay. So we can move then
to the next item.
Yeah, item 2 is Attorney General update.
Okay. I would like to introduce our speaker for this morning, our Attorney General. On April 23rd, 2021, Rob Bonta was sworn in as the 34th Attorney General of the State of California, the first person of Filipino descent and the second Asian American to occupy the position. Attorney General Bonta's passion for justice and fairness was instilled in him by his parents, who served on the front lines of some of America's most important social justice movements. It's why he decided to become a lawyer, to help right historic wrongs and fight for people who have been harmed. He worked his way through college and graduated with honors from Yale and attended Yale Law School. Attorney General Bonta has led statewide fights for racial, economic, and environmental justice, and work to further the rights of immigrant families, renters, and working Californians. He previously worked as deputy city attorney for the city and county of San Francisco, where he represented the city and county employees and fought to protect California from exploitation and racial profiling. He went on to pursue elected office in Alameda County, first as an Alameda council member and later as an assembly member representing Oakland, Alameda, and San Leandro. In the state assembly, Attorney General Bonta enacted national leading reforms to inject more justice and fairness into government institutions. As the people's attorney, he sees seeking accountability from those who abuse their power and harm others as one of the most important functions of the job. He is married to Mia Bonta, and they are the proud parents of 3 children, Reina, Ileana, and Andres, as well as their dog, Legolas. Please join me in welcome Attorney General Rob Bonta. I see the square, but Attorney General, are you there?
This is Edwin Salcedo with Attorney General Bonta's office. He should be joining us just shortly, I think, in a minute or so. So,
okay.
Trying to get him online now.
Oh, all right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we wait, I have a small quote from Maya Angelou that I'll just place here. Especially as we're celebrating Black History Month, I just thought it was appropriate. And the quote is, "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." And I just thought it was appropriate that, especially what we're doing, our work is, as commissioners, and it's our job to really help people in our community know that they matter, help them know that, help them feel safe, included, help them know that they are all valued. As we work diligently, I hope that we can continue to project these positive feelings in our community and move forward to eliminate hate.
May I ask a question pertaining to what Pat Davis said a few minutes ago? She referenced a racial equity roadmap. I'm not sure if that's the actual name of it or if that is just its task. But may we get a copy of that if we don't already have one?
I'll email that to everyone.
Thank you.
What's that?
About Black History Month?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just want to piggyback on what you just shared, Joanne, about Black History Month. Is that okay?
Yes, sure. Thank
you. Yeah, because I have been also reflecting because we made a statement a couple months ago, right, about ethnic studies. And I just want there to be a reminder that we need to learn from our history, the struggles, as well as the celebrations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, February right now for me is very precious because of Lunar New Year. But a lot of people are also reflecting on, you know, what's happened in the past 2 years, especially last year, regarding, you know, hate. And what we've seen across the country, that out of respect for the Black community, and I know that we had a wonderful celebration over the weekend in Anaheim and other places, that we remember their struggles. And American history cannot exist without the Black history. And I really want there to be acknowledgement of how important that is.
Absolutely.
I just want to thank everybody, and thank you, Joanne, for bringing it up. And I'll stay here. Happy Lunar New Year. And I wish everybody in the Year of the Tiger good health, prosperity, and let us find some peace this year somehow.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Very good points. I mean, I always stress to my children and really to anyone I meet that Black history is American history. And although we have a separate month dedicated to it, I think it's a matter of having that, you know, some people say, well, why do we have to single Black history out? Because we're playing catch up. We want everyone in our country to realize the contributions of Black Americans in this country and how it helped, the contributions helped to build this country. So it's important to learn, to always keep learning about our history.
And just so you know, Commissioner Dobie has now joined us. She was having some issues with the Zoom link, but she is now here.
Hi, Tanya.
Hello.
Hi.
And if it's going to be a little bit longer, if you want, we can move to item 4, because that should be a quick item. Just, it's just the one to continue meeting virtually. We can just get one out of the way if you want.
Sure.
Okay, so item number 4 is review and reconsider state of emergency under AB 361 and make findings to continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of emergency arising from COVID-19 as required by Government Code subsection 54959E3.
And it looks like this is going to be once again appropriate to continue to meet virtually if anyone has any other comments about that. But as we climb our way out of the pandemic, hopefully we can meet together live soon. But at this point, I feel it will still be appropriate to meet virtually. I agree, Mrs. Matsuba.
Thank you.
We can get a motion in a second.
I'll motion.
I'll second.
Okay, and I will take the roll call. Commissioner Briseño?
Yes.
Commissioner Buck?
Yes.
Commissioner Dobie? Commissioner Dobie, you're muted. I'll come back. Commissioner Faruqi?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay.
You called me?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Faruqi?
Yes.
Commissioner Kent?
Yes.
Commissioner Leach?
Yes.
Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Commissioner Matsuba?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Neill? Commissioner Steinberg?
Yes.
And Commissioner Wang?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right. Oh, and I do see the Attorney General, I believe.
Welcome, Attorney General Bonta. We have introduced you. I've introduced you. And I am Chairperson Matsuba, and we're just so happy to have you with us today. So anytime you'd like to start.
Thank you. Well, the honor's mine, and thank you for the introduction. Madam Chair, and my apologies for running behind. I appreciate the opportunity to spend some time here with you today, and let me just thank the entire Commission for this partnership, and also to Commissioner Fareed Faruqi for the invitation following my visit to CARE LA, which was last November. So appreciate the follow-up and the invitation, and being welcome to join you today. And it's an important space to share together, and hope this meeting serves as an opportunity to deepen our relationship and what we all are committed to, the fight against the forces of hate. Late last year, I visited Orange County and met with leaders in Santa Ana to discuss the rise of hate in this community and across California. And during our conversation, I learned a lot about what was happening on the ground. And I heard community members tell me a hate incident or a crime against one person traumatizes entire communities. I heard individuals feel victimized when they're reporting incidents. I heard that we need cultural and linguistic specific reporting hotlines. I heard a need to build more trust between local law enforcement here in Orange County and in the community. And hope to learn more today. Listening is a really important part of moving forward, and especially want to hear more about your efforts right here with the Commission. And you don't need me to tell you this. As you know very well, this work is incredibly urgent. According to the most recent data from 2020, California experienced a 31% increase in hate crimes across the board against all communities. And here in Orange County, according to your very own hate crimes report locally, there was a 35% increase amid the pandemic. And these statistics, of course, as we know, as we recognize, are very disturbing. They are upsetting, and worse, we know they're probably not exhaustive, that for many communities, incidents of hate often go underreported. So it's probably worse than what the data shows because of that lack of reporting. And that's why your work and our conversation today is so important. We must continue to empower our diverse communities and rid our cities and towns of hate in all its forms every time we have the opportunity to do so. And as your partner, I'm going to continue to do my part to try to lead the charge at the state level. That's why under my watch at the Department of Justice, we've done a number of things. We've established the Racial Justice Bureau to ensure that we're looking at new and ongoing matters across DOJ through the lens of racial and social justice, and among other efforts, fighting hate crimes and hate organizations. We issued new guidance and resources to help the public and law enforcement better understand and address hate crime in California. We launched CARE, the Office of Community Awareness, Response, and Engagement, to directly engage with and respond to the needs of communities. And we are continuing our statewide anti-hate crime roundtable series, where my team and I are visiting local communities to better learn about what's working and where we can further collaborate to turn the tide together. And I pledge to keep working with partners like you. There's no place for hate in Orange County, in California, or anywhere, anytime, full stop, end of story. and I know you feel the same way. We want to do everything in our power to make that reality for all of our communities. So I'm grateful to be with all of you in this fight, and I'm looking forward to collaborating and learning more from each of you. Thanks again for the opportunity to make a few remarks and to be in the circle with you today.
Thank you so much for being here. Does anyone have any questions they would like to? Yes, Ada.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Matsuba. I just want to take a moment and thank our AG, Bonta, for being here with us. And in a very short period of time since you've become the AG, I really feel that Orange County has felt your leadership from, you know, your investigation of the oil spill to your visit here, as you mentioned, on October 26th to, you know, speak about the crime, the crime report with Mayor Sarmiento, and also your work to resolve Hogue and Providence, the issues that we had there. I just really feel lucky to be represented by you, and also I just want to say that your presence here means the world to me. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Commissioner. Very, very kind of you. I just want to appreciate those kind remarks and say that my commitment is to be the Attorney General for all of California. That certainly includes Orange County, and proud to be able to work with you in collaboration to find solutions to the challenges that we're facing in Orange County together. So I appreciate those very kind remarks. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Ms. Jennifer.
I see Jennifer, you had your hand up.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Attorney General Bonta, again, thank you for being here. My name is Jennifer, and what comes to mind is what's close to my heart is our older adults, our most vulnerable, and, you know, of course, our families and children who, we have many families who come to us and tell us, I take my kid to the park, and these little kids are making remarks, how do you fight that, right? Because you're not going to verbally attack a child who, you really can't blame them, you know, it's really the environment perhaps that they're exposed to. And I just think about the, you know, our effort really in the past 2 years, and our expansion hate project, basically, that's happening right now. It was passed just in December. We're just getting started. And I know one of the struggles is that all the groups, all the cultural, all of the racial, all of the religious groups, they should be part of that conversation. But there's only so much funding. And I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, how should we approach it? What do you see, or what do you envision for Orange County to tackle the problem when everybody needs to be at the table, but there's only so much room at the moment? You know, we're waiting for the Stop the Hate funding from California that I know a lot of the groups applied for in December, right? And I hope to be able to couple that with our efforts in Orange County. What are your thoughts?
A couple thoughts. Let me just talk about the broad issue of what I see as sort of a short-term, mid-term, and long-term approach to how we address hate. We know hate crimes have a very specific set of elements that need to be met. There's something that doesn't rise to hate crimes but are fueled by hate incidents and hate violence. And it's important that we fight hate in all places, at all levels, and, you know, stopping hate incidents from becoming hate crimes is very important, and educating our young people early so that they're thinking about inclusion and appreciating and celebrating diversity and seeing the strengths in our differences instead of seeing them as reasons to target others is going to be very important. So education won't necessarily stop a hate incident today, but it can be an investment in stopping one in the future. And so we need to be sort of on all tracks at once. And that's how I see those sort of interventions. And to your point about children, it should be about, you know, education and healing, restoration, not punishment. And our young people, you know, deserve an opportunity for our adults to help teach them. And then as far as resources, you know, we're always fighting against scarcity, right? There's never enough to do all the things that we want to do. But there are some historic investments that have been made, as you point out, in California to address hate and hate crimes, over $100 million in the last budget. I know that there's also ways to sort of put the pieces of the pot, you know, the budget pie chart together by pulling down some federal money. There's money in the federal hate crime statute, too, to invest in prevention. There's foundations that are focused on this, some with respect to certain communities. So there's multiple sort of pathways to pull down the funding to get to the total amount. And our CARE group, particularly Kat New, who helps run it, is someone I'd like to put you in touch with to help identify. You know, we really promoted the application deadline and process so that community groups who are doing great work, and just, you know, we'd benefit so much if they were able to increase the scale and touch more lives and do more of that same work for more people. You know, we wanted them to get the money, and we helped encourage them to apply. And not everyone knows about that. So we're about the application and how to get the money. So we want to help identify ways for Orange County to get all the resources that it needs. When there's a will and a desire to do it, the problem should not be money. It should be funded in a way that allows the full impact that's desired. So maybe if I could help connect you with Kat Newell and my team and help identify some ways to increase the funding that I know Orange County is seeking, and we'll try to do our best to help make that happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Leach.
Thank you. General Bonta, thank you for joining us today. It is a pleasure to have you with us, but also very important for us to hear what you have to say. As you have mentioned, and as you know, our commission is involved with the different types of hate that go on. I mean, everything from racial to sexual orientation, hate against different faiths. COVID has uncovered much. We have learned recently of many medical personnel who receive abuse on the job in connection with COVID and that type of thing. But my question is, we this year have a big election coming up. While I realize it's a midterm for some, it is still an election, and we are learning from across the country that there is much abuse and hate acts going on toward election workers. I'm wondering, is your office taking a proactive stance to alleviate some of the potential hate acts that might go on toward election workers rather than having to deal with it after the fact? And if so, can you share any of that so that we might be mindful of what is going on if we see anything here in Orange County?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your question. And let me sort of touch on some of the first points you were making about the unfortunate and very tragic widespread nature of hate right now. It seems to be touching so many folks, including elected officials. So I know school board members I heard from across the state are just, you know, just really painfully receiving a lot of acts of hate and aggression from other folks, and election workers may well be targeted as well. So every year we have a hotline that we have on election day that's there to have any community member available to any community member to report any potential violation around election law. And so let me follow up with what that number will be for the June primary and the November general election. I'll make sure my team gets it to you. Edwin, with my external affairs team, is here and can get that and share it with you. But that's the hotline that we advertise a little bit closer to the election, so it's top of mind as we go into election day. But to the extent people see potential violations, if they're worried about their own rights, for example, if they're, you know, in line before 8 o'clock and they're told they can't vote, you know, we want to hear about that. We want to enforce our very strong election protection laws, and including any, you know, person who has been who's doing their civic duty to help make sure our democratic process moves forward. They should not be targeted by hate or for any other reason. So that's what that hotline's for, and we'll follow up. Make sure you have that.
Thank you, Commissioner Faruqi.
Thank you, Commissioner, for Joanne. I appreciate that. To the AG, Bonter, thank you so very much, sir, for being with us this morning, afternoon almost. Your leadership as AG of California is really shaping conversations and issues that affect your not only hate crime, but many other things that keep coming at your table and kind of follow a little bit of what you're doing. And we really appreciate that, keeping us safe and everything else. Of all things being done and the new initiative that we have at the Commission that has been funded for $1 million until the next fiscal year, I know Norma and her team are frantically working to get the data, to reach out to the communities, the CBOs, and everything else. While we are doing that and working with other law enforcement and resources that you have also identified that will come through, guide us along that pathway. The recent issues and that continue on, and the most recent, the one in Texas, the killing and that, the unfortunate incident that happened into the synagogue. Luckily, nobody was injured or hurt. Well, they were injured, but not killed, other than the assailant himself. But places of worship is a big concern for all of us, right? It's a sanctuary that we go for safety, not to be, that we have to be watchful or looking over. And every place of worship has increased their security in many ways, which cost a lot of money to do that. But what should we do within Orange County? I know there's, and we have our commissioner as well, Michael, UC, Irvine. So the question is, what are your thoughts about what should we be doing proactively and in this tracing or tracking or whatever that may be? So you're more vigilant as individuals, as communities and organizations like us, even though we're dealing on the hate side. But this kind of leads to acting upon something that you don't like. And people do it differently.
Let me try to address the part about the question related to places of worship, and certainly to some of the early points already made by commissioners, rightfully, people are being targeted because of who they are, how they look, where they're from, who they love, how they pray, and so it's unfortunately very broad the forms of hate that we are struggling with and communities are facing today. We are unfortunately seeing places of worship being targeted. And there's a specific state fund that allows places of worship, synagogues, other churches, also places, LGBTQ plus centers, to apply for funding to increase their security, whether it be, cameras stronger methods for keeping people, allowing only people to come in who should be coming in. There's funding that can be drawn down to make sure that these are secure places where folks can be with the communities they choose to be with, worship the way they wish, and do it safely in community. So that is something I want to share with you. And again, we'll follow up with the details. We want to make sure you know exactly where that fund is in our large state government system and how to apply for it, when the money becomes available, what you need to present to be eligible to be considered. So we'll follow up with that. And then, the to your broader question about what should folks do, in community, like it's with commissions like this in communities like Orange County, where folks are identifying challenges and listening to the impact of communities, the victims, the individuals and the communities being hurt, and identifying solutions. And that's where the best ideas come. And so listening to communities, scaling what's working, and that is going to be important, and sharing out what you think, this commission, what you identify the most impactful ways to support our communities that are facing the forces of hate, and then, I'd like to come in and when something's working, help scale it or help, put more funding into it so it can help more people. I'd like to take what's working in Orange County to San Diego or L.A. or Sacramento so they can benefit as well. And what they're doing well in Sacramento and L.A. and San Diego, I'd like Orange County to know about. So connecting the dots and really sharing the best practices as we go through this struggle together, I think is going to be important. And that's a role I can help play in part of my purpose in meeting with a lot of the local leaders like yourselves who are on the ground doing this work.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Wayne, you have another question?
Yes, I'm back. I'm so excited that you're here, so there's just so much to say and ask. I actually wanted just to do a follow-up regarding the state's hate task force. What is the status on that, and who's being targeted, and how can, or who's being invited to the table, and how can we be involved? Because that, I think, was really historical, and we just want to know what's going on over there.
And you should, and maybe that's something that all the hate commissions can get an update on, you know, as you sort of identify the priorities for your work, you should know what the state is doing as well, what voices are in the room. I know that it's very broad because hate, unfortunately, is being targeted at very broad groups. Of course, there was a lot of attention and focus on the tragic and very painful anti-API hate violence that we saw early on, particularly, as you mentioned, against our seniors as well. But it's been more broad as well since then. You know, there's been Islamophobia and anti-Semitism and homophobia. And so let me see if I can get you an update with exactly who is working on the task force, their priorities now. I think there's an opportunity for collaboration, and you know, commissions like yours should not be operating in isolation. It should be in conjunction with others that share the same mission and work. So let me get the most recent update, and we'll circle back and share it with you.
Thank you. And I have to say, when you came into Orange County, it was like the talk of the town that morning. Messages were flying everywhere, and everybody's asking, who's there? Where is the Attorney General going? And I know it's like one of those things. Not everybody could be everywhere at the same time, right? There's just so many moving pieces. But I would like to just put it out there that I do believe that the commission, the commissioners, should be part of that conversation. And I hope that when you do come back again, we'll be notified. And, you know, everyone has a busy schedule, but trust me, like, we'll make time. Because this is very timely, and there is a lot at stake. And right now, I just feel that we have a great opportunity to really address it and find solutions. And it is hard work. It's difficult conversations, but many of us here are willing to have it.
Absolutely.
No, I love that. Thank you. And let me just say, when we've gone into different communities, we do our best to do outreach and have a broad range of perspectives and experiences and viewpoints at the table to really inform a broad discussion. And we almost always will necessarily not include someone who could be a critical voice. And for that, you know, I apologize if we didn't include someone who could, you know, who's doing the work. It's not personal. I got personal texts from colleagues and partners who wanted to be in the room and needed to explain, you know, who we chose and why we chose them, and you know, we'll live with that. But it's certainly, you know, there was probably 15 other meetings we could have with the same number of people with a great group of leaders on the same issue that could really move the ball forward. So we'll continue to do our best. We'll continue to try to be as inclusive as we can. We appreciate your work and want to collaborate with you. And, you know, addressing hate is all about working together. And, you know, we're at our best when we work together, when we lean on each other and learn from each other and listen to one another and team up and address the forces of hate, that common challenge. And so we're committed to that. And I hear your commitment as well, and we look forward to continuing to work with you. And let me just thank you for your work on the commission. I'm honored to be here with you today and appreciate the important work that you're doing every day.
Well, thank you, Attorney. Thank you, Attorney General. And, you know, I just have to say, because I think your first stop was Santa Ana. We're in downtown Santa Ana, so messages were flying. So when I made it to Anaheim and I knew Fareed was there, I was moved. You know, Fareed does really represent well for us, and I'm just, again, just so grateful that you're here today.
Thank you. Wonderful having you.
Thank you so much for being here. Is that it from everyone? Thank you again, Attorney General. We really appreciate your time and just sharing some of your thoughts with us and your plans. We really understand what you mean, and we feel the same way about us working together and pulling together with different groups in our community to make this happen and abolish hate. So thank you so much.
Thank you all. Thank you for having me. Honored to be with you. And thank you all for your great work. Look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Can we take a picture?
What's that?
Sure.
Can we take a picture?
Oh, picture.
I did a screenshot with everybody not even knowing I was doing one. But I guess if you want to turn on your camera.
Yeah, get one. With
get
everyone.
Smile. Take care of your hair.
I'm going to produce.
I should probably turn my camera off too. No camera ready, but who cares? All right. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Great. So, Jamie, let's move on to the next item.
Yes, item number 3 is Brown Act Refresher Training.
And we have here, we have John Cleveland and Nicole Swain are going to lead us with this. John and Nicole.
Good morning, everyone. This is John Cleveland.
Good morning, everyone. I'm just pulling up my screen here. Sorry, I'm so used to Teams. I've got to bring myself back here to Zoom. There we go. Can everyone see the screen I'm sharing? Great. So, good morning, and thank you for having us. I just want to start by thanking the Human Relations Commission and just for inviting John and I here today to review these important topics with all of you. I also thought it was important to just share a little history behind the why for the conception of this training presentation. Our OC Community Resources Leadership Team really values our commission members and appreciates their services to not only our department, this county, and our community, but they wanted to sort out a way to offer our new and even our experienced commission members, county staff, and meeting participants a training on the most inquired about topics. So County Council graciously collaborated with us on this presentation to provide all of you with a detailed review of those areas of interest that we found. We are always looking to enhance our training opportunities, so please feel free to offer suggestions or ask questions related to our training at the end of this presentation. I would like to introduce you to John Cleveland. He's our Senior Deputy County Counsel, and my name is Nicole Swain. I'm a Deputy Purchasing Agent and the ASR and Special Projects Manager for OC Community Resources. Here are some of the topics that we'll be reviewing today. The Brown Act, AB 361, our County Executive Office Policy and Board-Approved Bylaws Template, the committee bylaws, kind of a higher overview of those, and then, as I stated earlier, an opportunity for questions related to our training materials. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to John now to review some important history, key concepts, and legality for the Brown Act.
Thank you, Nicole. As you do your important work as a commission, it's important to follow the Brown Act, which governs public meetings. The Brown Act generally requires all local meetings of legislative bodies to be open and public. The Act is found in the Government Code, starting with Section 54950. The basic rule is that all meetings of legislative bodies must be open and public, and that actions and deliberations must also be taken openly. The purpose of the Brown Act is to facilitate public participation in government and to enable people to be informed so they can keep control over the government per the
misuse of the democratic process. There's a few defined terms and key concepts that are important to the Brown Act. First is legislative body. Second is local agency. The Brown Act applies only to legislative bodies of local agencies. A legislative body includes the governing board of a local agency or any local board created by statute, and any commission, committee, board, or other body created by formal action of a legislative body. A local agency includes the county or any board, commission, or agency thereof. Your commission is subject to the Brown Act. There's an exception, and it's the ad hoc committee exception to the definition of legislative body. An ad hoc advisory committee composed solely of the members of the legislative body that are less than a quorum of that legislative body is not itself a legislative body. This is a limited exception, and the ad hoc committee needs to be limited in purpose and in time. So there's an exception to the exception. Standing committees, even if composed of less than a quorum of the legislative body, are still subject to the open meeting requirements of the Brown Act. So keep that in mind as you may form various ad hoc or standing committees.
Can we ask questions?
Sure, go ahead.
Back on the last one about standing committees. So if you have a standing committee like an executive committee or a communications committee, they would be subject to the Brown Law that would have to be open and public.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And we'll have the opportunity to address any other questions at the end, but feel free to jump in if something is on top of your mind. So the Brown Act applies only to meetings of legislative bodies. A meeting is defined. A meeting is a congregation of the majority of the members of the legislative body at the same time and location, including teleconference, to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. Meetings can happen inadvertently, so keep an eye out and avoid serial meetings. Serial meetings are prohibited. A majority of the members of a legislative body shall not, outside of a meeting authorized by this chapter, use a series of communications of any kind directly or to intermediaries to discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item of business that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. But keep in mind that one-way briefings, for example, staff briefings, are permitted. The prohibition on serial meetings does not apply to separate conversations or communications with members of the legislative body in order to answer questions or provide information regarding a matter that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the local agency, provided that person does not communicate to the members of the legislative body the comments or positions of any other member or members of the legislative.
Excuse me, may I ask a question about that, please?
Yes.
Would you give a less legalese example of that type of thing? Because this is very bureaucratic and, as I said, full of some legalese here. You know, what's your definition of discuss? What's your definition of deliberate? I understand we can't take actions or anything, but if a executive committee is formed or there is filling in a fellow commissioner that may have missed an ad hoc committee or something like that, give us an example of this. This, you know, hardcore rather than the legalistic viewpoint.
It's a good question because there is ambiguity in gray area. All these terms and in the specific factual context of each year of meetings, but we're going to get to a slide where we discuss limited exceptions for questions or responses or directions to staff to put an item on a future agenda. And those have been construed narrowly. They are limited. So I suggest you err on the side of caution and really minimize discussions or actions on any item that's not on the agenda, it's not properly before you. That is the fundamental theme that you need to keep in mind. Discussion, any substantive dialogue regarding subject matter should be avoided unless it's part of an agenda item that's been properly agendized. And if there's specific actual situations that come up, or maybe have come up in the past, and you'd like to discuss these further, please get together with OCCR staff, get on a phone call, and discuss it in greater detail after this meeting. So there's a few other exceptions to the definition of meeting. And each of these, again, are highly fact-specific. And if you ever think that you need to avail yourself of one of the exceptions, I encourage you to talk to OCCR staff, talk to me. Let's go over it in detail and make sure that we're operating within the confines of the ground. So these exceptions include an exception for individual contacts or conversations between member of a legislative body and any other person, provided that they are not serial meetings which you've already discussed. There's an exception for attendances at conferences that are open to the public or at community meetings, attendance at open and notice meetings of another local agency, attendance at purely social or ceremonial occasions, and attendance at open and notice standing committee meetings, provided the members attend only as observers. So, for example, you have a standing committee meeting, your entire Brown Act body may attend, provided you are in the audience and not active participants. So let's talk a little bit about agendas and notice periods for each of the three types of meetings under the Brown Act. For regular meetings, each legislative body must provide the time and place for holding the regular meetings. Such regular meetings must typically be conducted within the boundaries of the agency's jurisdiction. Notice of those meetings must be provided at least 72 hours before the regular meeting, and the agenda must be posted at a location freely accessible to members of the public and on the agency's primary website. The agenda must contain a brief general description of each item of business to be transacted or discussed, and except as otherwise provided by law, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda. For special meetings, the notice period is short. Any presiding officer of the legislative body or majority of members of the legislative body may call a special meeting by posting a notice, also delivering the written notice to each member of the legislative body and to members of the media that have requested such notice at least 24 hours prior to the special meeting. The call and notice for the special meeting specify the time and place for the special meeting and the business to be transacted or discussed. Again, no other business shall be considered at these meetings except for what is posted on that special meeting agenda. Emergency meetings are also allowed. It probably doesn't come up often with your commission. An emergency is defined as a work stoppage, coping activity, or other activity that severely impairs public health, safety, or both. A legislative body may hold an emergency meeting without complying hour special meeting notice and posting requirements. However, telephonic notice is required. Alright, let's talk a little bit about public participation in these public meetings. At regular and special meetings, members of the public have a right to address the legislative body on any item appearing on the agenda before or at the time the legislative body considers the item. The Brown Act generally requires that all meetings be open and public. Each regular meeting agenda shall also provide an opportunity for members of the public to address the legislative body on any item of interest to the public within the subject matter jurisdiction of the body. And the Brown Act generally requires all votes to be made public and prohibits secret votes or secret ballots. So this is a common question that comes up. When can an item not appearing on
consent agenda be discussed or acted on. The general rule is that no official action can be taken on non-agendized matters, but members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights. On their own initiative or in response to questions posed by the public, a member of a legislative body or its staff may ask a question or clarification, make a brief announcement, or make a brief report on his or her own activities. A member of the legislative body or the body itself may provide a reference to staff or other resources for factual information, request staff to report back to the body of a subsequent concerning any matter, or take action to direct staff to place a matter of business on the future agenda. There are consequences for violating the Brown Act. One is criminal penalties. When there's intent involved, when a member of a legislative body attends a meeting where action is taken in violation of the Brown Act, and the member intends to deprive the public of information which the member knows or has reason to know the public is entitled to receive, there's a misdemeanor issue. Civil enforcement is more common. A district attorney or a member of the public may commence an action for the purpose of stopping or preventing violations of the Brown Act. In such a case, district attorney or the member of the public file a lawsuit seeking to enjoin such action or declare null and void any action in violation of the Brown Act. And a prevailing plaintiff would be entitled to attorney's fees and court costs, which itself is a deterrent to violating the Brown Act. Thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Nicole for her presentation on AB 361, and then I'll come back and talk a little bit more about general bylaws concepts.
Thank you, John, for that great Brown Act overview. Okay, for those of you who may not be as familiar with Assembly Bill 361, although it sounds like you guys are pretty familiar with it, I just wanted to include some facts and publication highlights that we felt were relevant to our work here. Assembly Bill 361 was signed in September 2021, amending the Brown Act to provide additional provisions allowing meetings of legislative bodies to be conducted via teleconference. AB 361 does allow a local agency legislative body to hold a meeting utilizing teleconferencing as long as the proclamation of emergency is in effect and in any of these following circumstances: state or local officials have imposed or recommended measures to promote social distancing, the meeting is being held for the purposes of determining by majority vote whether as a result of that emergency that meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health and safety of the attendees, or the legislative body has determined that as a result of the emergency, meeting in person would present imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees. So very similar, but as a reminder also, the governor's proclamation of emergency related to the COVID-19 pandemic is still in effect, and there are still requirements. Sorry, I needed to switch slides. There are still requirements, though, if a meeting is being held via teleconferencing under AB 361, so let's review some of those. Notice of the meeting must be given in compliance with the Brown Act, and notice must include the means by which the public may access the meeting and provide comments. The public must be provided access to the meeting via a call-in option or internet service option, and allowed to address the legislative body directly. The agency does not have to provide an in-person option to the public to attend the meeting. The meeting must be conducted in a manner that protects the statutory and constitutional rights of the parties and the public appearing before the legislative body. If there is a disruption to the meeting broadcast or in the ability to take in or call in or internet public comment, then no further action can be taken on the agenda items until that issue is resolved. The body cannot require comments to be submitted before the start of the meeting. The public must be allowed to make real-time public comments. And finally, a reasonable time for public comment must be provided. So if the agency provides a timed public comment period, then the public comment period must be left open until the time expires. These are also, keep in mind, just publication highlights, and of course the whole AB361 can be found on the state's website, but it's very important to remember this. Committee findings must be made every 30 days in order to continue to conduct teleconference meetings under AB361, and the body must find that it has reconsidered the circumstances of the state of emergency, and that either the emergency continues to impact the ability to meet safely in person, or if state or local officials continue to impose or recommend social distancing. Okay, so let's jump over to our County Executive Office policy so I can share some details with you pertaining to the policy and the bylaws template. In September of 2021, the County Executive Office released its boards, commissions, committees, UCCs, under the jurisdiction of the Board of Supervisors County Policy, and the purpose was to establish a policy and procedures for the development, review, and approval of UCC bylaws created by the action of the Board of Supervisors, or as required by the statute ordinance that include the elements contained in the CEO bylaws template. So the goal of this was to achieve standardization, uniformity, and consistency. Something about the process for at-large appointments was also established in our CEO policy, and pursuant to the revised Board Rules of Procedure, Rule 16, appointments to a BCC that are not designated for nomination by a specific board district will be deemed at-large appointments, and the appointments shall be for a period of 2 years and only submitted by the board chair for placement on a board meeting agenda. Under this policy, there is a procedure in place, and our department will follow that, to nominate candidates for at-large appointments, and if they're recommended for approval, the board's chair's office will submit the ASR and attachments to the clerk of the board for inclusion on the next board meeting agenda. The County Executive Office ECC bylaws template was revised in July of 2021, and as part of the policy, ECCs that are subject to board jurisdiction are being asked to work with their county department staff and their county council to update their bylaws in accordance with the board-approved bylaws template. OC Community Resources supports several ECCs under the board's jurisdiction, and the bylaws of each of these ECCs should be reviewed and revised in a manner that's consistent with the new CEO template. I'll be working directly and have already started working directly with our county staff leads for each of our BCCs just to ensure that the coordination of these updates is done in a timely manner. Bylaws should serve as a rule, or as rules, for internal administration and management of each BCC. If local, state, or federal authority require additional elements that do not appear in the approved template, or if local, state, or federal authority necessitate the modification of elements that do appear in the CEO template, then the BCC can deviate from the template. However, there is more, there's a lot more to that, so as we're making and creating those updates, I'll address those. Okay, so I'm going to hand it back over to John for bylaw updates. John, you can't.
Thank you, Nicole.
Okay.
We're going to go over a few bylaws concepts that are applicable to all BCCs or boards, commissions, councils, committees, equally applicable to yours. The first concept is that the bylaws of committees like your own contain the purpose, duties, roles, organizational structure, and operating procedures for CCCs, the County Board of Supervisors, as a legislative body in charge of the county, approves the bylaws and place of rules and appointed members. BCCs function under the authority of the board. As your bylaws provide, you are an advisory body to the Board of Supervisors. As your primary purpose, the citizen members on BCCs provide the public with a general communication and input to the board and provide an opportunity for citizens to participate in government. Let's go to the next slide. All right. BCCs generally serve as advisory bodies to the board as authorized by the respective bylaws, and the bylaws generally describe the procedure by which BCCs advocate, communicate with the public, work with county staff. BCCs do not engage in political advocacy. BCCs generally do not take positions on any legislation or legislative issues without approval of the county. Board of Supervisors directs the county's legislative efforts and has the authority to make policy decisions for the county. The County Executive Office of Legislative Affairs is the lead department for the county's legislative efforts. County staff from OC Community Resources and the County Executive Office of Legislative Affairs your commission ensure that they draft your communications and perform your duties in a manner that is consistent with the respective bylaws and the legislative policy platform.
Was there a delay, John?
Yeah, so. Still looking.
I don't know if everyone else is experiencing it. Kind of threw me off a little.
Okay, so thank you very much for your service. If there's any questions, you can address general questions. Any specific or sensitive questions, be happy to speak with you further after the meeting.
This is Commissioner Faruqi. Thank you to both of you, John and Nicole, for doing the presentation. This is heavy stuff to understand. Yeah, we face with this all the time, but thank you for this overview of both the bylaws and how we work with and through that. First of all, my thing is, do we get this slide deck or the presentation that you did, can that be shared with the commission?
Yes.
Jamie, thank you. Appreciate that. I know you touched upon the different methods of meeting and all that, and there's also that closed sessions. I can't remember if we ever had that in our situations here. Maybe we did. I can't remember. But you didn't touch upon that, so I don't know if that had any bearing to our work. There's things that you may have to discuss, but most of all of our meetings are public, as you noted, so I'm just wondering if there's any possibility of a closed session and what does that look like for our commission?
Right. That's a great question. It's my understanding that your commission would not typically be involved in closed session matters. The Brown Act provides limited exceptions for closed sessions in specific instances, such as pending or threatened litigation, human resource issues where privacy considerations related to employees are an issue, the negotiation of real estate transactions, things like that. So I think the fact that you probably haven't had closed sessions in the past is a good indicator that it's something that doesn't come up regularly. But if you think there ever is a situation that might qualify under one of various exceptions for closed sessions, we could look into it.
Okay. Thank you. And another follow-up, if I may, I don't want to take all of it. There's always this thing that we meet at these meetings here as a body, right, and we discuss business. But we really don't get to know each other as much. Now, this can happen on one-on-one basis, which some of us try to do. But is there anything, I know in some of the other things you talk about social attendance of events and things of that, which is open to anyone. It's not just for a commissioner or whatever. So you happen to be there, two or three of us. maybe a volunteer effort or whatever that may be. Those are different situations. Is there anything that you're not violating and you're not talking business, but as socially, short of saying a retreat, just to celebrate or to honor or whatever that may be, that we hang out as commissioners together?
Yes, you certainly can hang out individually or one-on-one. You can hang out in a group that is less than a quorum, and whether you don't discuss or deliberate on subject matters within the jurisdiction of your legislative body. So the problem really is that if you were to get together as a group, and even if you promise not to discuss anything related to the Human Relations Commission, there's just a tremendous possibility that something might inadvertently come up, or it might give off the appearance of a public meeting, which you don't want to do, or undermine your mission, show that you're acting within the confines of the Brown Act. It's just basically too risky. So a group session I would definitely advise against. Individual limited contacts less than a quorum is a possibility. And then you're right, we could look at the details of exceptions to Brown Act meetings and make sure that you're not having a, quote, meeting under the Brown Act or a ceremonial occasion, something like that.
Right.
But those are fact specific. They should be construed narrowly. And every time you're getting closer to a group that's more than a quorum, you're just kind of increasing the chances that you're going to be perceived negatively.
So you cannot attend a ball game this weekend. Call it a group meeting. Super Bowl. I don't know. Just
well, I mean, theoretically you could. If everyone went to the same Super Bowl party from the legislative body, you might be able to get away with that, but it's just too easy to inadvertently run afoul, discuss something that's pertinent, because it's all on the top of your mind.
I was just going to ask our chairwoman if she's throwing a party, and I could see that a lot.
Call me. Okay. It looks like Commissioner Leach, did you have a question?
I did. And forgive me if I'm being dense here, but I'm trying to get a little bit more clarification. If an executive committee of the commission is formed and held, and it consists of the officers as well as the past chair of the commission, and then a staff member, with the intent of planning agenda items or learning more about possible hate incidents that have occurred, just to be briefed. Are you saying that is not acceptable according to the Brown Act?
Well, the standing committee would be a Brown Act body, and we would have an agenda for that standing committee. And then you would be able to act pursuant to the agenda for that standing committee. Because one of the slides we went over kind of discussed how there's an exception for ad hoc committees. You have a limited purpose, limited time ad hoc committee consisting of less than a quorum of the entire legislative body, and there's no requirement to follow the Brown Act or the ad hoc committee. However, standing committees are tip, unless there's some special factual scenario circumstance that's providing for an exception, standing committees are subject to the Brown Act. You should have a public agendized meeting agenda where you have action items and you only discuss or deliberate, take action on those action on those items on the agenda.
So, Mr. Cleveland, how then does a commission like ours plan? Does the chair call up the vice chair, then they call up the executive director, and they discuss it there, and we just don't call it a standing committee? I mean, how do you prepare for anything except show up to the meeting?
Yeah, well, I would want to do the daisy chain call scenario, because that sounds like a serial meeting.
Yes.
Discuss a slide. But you can plan in public. You can plan through ad hoc committees and we've been through standing committees. You can let certain commissioners take the lead on items and then present a draft game plan to the larger legislative body, and then that legislative body can take action, thereby kind of confirming the plan that's already been done in draft form by a limited number of your commissioners. This is how all legislative bodies act.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. John, can I just follow up on that? What would be an example of a standing committee? Is it something like a nomination committee or something very specific that is ongoing?
Yeah, anything that's permanent. If you have a permanent subcommittee, then that would be a standing committee. If it doesn't have a specific purpose or an end date, it would very likely be considered a standing committee. It's unlimited in time, unlimited in scope, in the sense that it's not going to end once its limited mission is completed.
Anyone else?
I have one more question, if you don't mind, Madam Chair. In order to educate ourselves and then be able to educate others, obviously, how does the Brown Act concern what I'm going to refer to as possible field trips, for lack of a better word right now? For instance, if commissioners wanted to find out more about, I'm going to use an example, finding out the situation at in the jails, the county jail, and they met there to be informed, is this a case of a no-no, or is it a case of the number of commissioners, or is it a case of anything else?
That's a good question, and I have to admit, I have heard this come up, and I don't have the best answer for you on the tip of my tongue right now, but I think it's going to depend on the facts, so we want to just structure it in a way that conforms with the Brown Act. That might entail conducting a public meeting at the jail facility, so it's noticed in public, and everyone knows that you are going to be at the jail facility discussing and deliberating on these matters within the subject matter of the body. Or it could be a limited ad hoc committee that's in charge of inspecting the jails, that limited ad hoc committee's not subject to the Brown Act, comes back, reports to the entire commission, and then you take action. It could also involve an exception. I just need to make sure I research that and report back to you accurately.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Everybody good? Well, wow, that was a lot. But we appreciate it. We really needed to review for some of us and go over for the first time with some of us. And I appreciate the information, and thank you for taking the time to come talk with us and go over it all.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. All right, we are going to move to our next item.
Yep, we completed item 4 already, so item number 5 is review, discuss, and approve commission statement under commission letterhead denouncing violence and hate in schools and community at large.
And, let's see, Norma, are you able to bring that up on the screen so we can just... can read it, but
give me a moment.
Okay, thank you. Well, that was certainly quite a bit of information and clarification. I thought I was clear on everything until we started going, and now I'm all over again. So So we did kind of touch on the recent incidents in the schools, and we would just like to make a public statement and have this written up for your approval. For many, the new year comes as a time of hope and opportunity to try again. However, recently there have been hate incidents in our South Orange County schools that have served as tragic reminders that our children are not immune from the cruel treatment of others. While these occurrences are not the norm, according to the California Healthy Kids Survey responses, 1/3 of 7th graders and 1 in 4 11th graders reported being harassed due to perceived race or ethnicity, sexual orientation, religion, gender, or disability. This is from California Healthy Kids, Orange County, Maine report in 2017 and 18. According to the National Academics of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, children and teens who are bullied can experience long-term physical effects, including brain functioning. While recent events have taken place at school, we know events take place also in the community as well as online. We have responsibility to identify the root causes of these hate incidents to assure that our children grow up to be the best versions of themselves. We condemn these incidents, but not the people involved, because the only way to heal is to rebuild together. We pledge to work with the community to address the root causes of hate. The mission of the Orange County Human Relations Commission is to seek out the causes of tension and conflict, discrimination and intolerance, and attempt to eliminate those causes. We believe in everyone's right to live free of racism, hate, discrimination, and bigotry, not only in Orange County, but beyond. These types of repugnant acts of hate speech and racism demonstrate the need to assess our past, acknowledge past instances of hate, intolerance, and racism, and recommit to the promotion of tolerance, equity, and condemning all types of hate. If you have been a victim or know someone who has been a victim of a hate incident, please call our confidential hotline, the number 714-480-6580, or via our online portal at ochumanrelations.org, hate crime report. Any comments?
If I may, in terms of this, making sure that everybody knows, there were a couple of incidents recently in South Orange County, both in schools. I had approached our chair and vice chair to see if I could be part of like making some kind of statement since it's in the district that I represent. And so this was just a start. And so one of the incidents involved students who are LGBT, and then the other involved the incident that Ms. Figueroa addressed in public comment. So just in case people weren't aware, I wanted to provide some context.
Thank you, Amy. I should have started with that. Thank you.
I have one question. I'm not quite certain how we're putting the statement out or to whom, but on the line where it says the mission of the Orange County Human Relations Commission is to, quote, seek out the causes of tension and conflict, discrimination, intolerance, and attempt to eliminate those causes. Should we be asked just how are you doing that? What should our response be? Because, I mean, I realize that the reporting is in the last graph, which is very important. But that's a very strong statement right there, that we are seeking out the causes and attempting to eliminate those causes. How do we respond if we are asked about that?
May I jump in?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I appreciate that. So first, that is the mission statement. And so the way that I believe that we're addressing that mission is we've had a number of community forums and listening sessions last year Commissioner Matsuba, Chair Matsuba, and Commissioner Wang, and Commissioner Faruqi and I had many hours of doing just that with the community. The staff at the commission do this on a daily basis in their efforts. And so Norma and Maureen and me in responding to incidents that occur, and then also in their networking and their practices of addressing, finding out what best practices are in addressing this. Also the upcoming events, for example, me and Commissioner Faruqi and I are involved in an event coming up on addressing the root causes of hate, and so that's coming up later this month. So those would just be a few examples.
I appreciate that, because I was fearful that with COVID and somewhat of the lockdown, that some of the forums were not being reached. And also, I guess part of it is with the schools especially, if school boards and administrators and even PTA, PTO groups are being contacted to say, you know, forums can now be presented to your groups and or to even student groups. So.
Yeah, and I was super cautious with this, and I actually honestly struggled with a little bit of this because I didn't want it to sound like we were blaming the schools, right? Because when especially with young people, people want to blame the parents or blame the schools or blame somebody. But really, we're all responsible because they're all, I mean, not to sound cheesy, but they're all our children. And so I wanted to come across as being collaborative and not pointing fingers. And because in some examples too, like the kids are the perpetrators, and I didn't want to give up on them. Like, I want them to learn and grow and have opportunities for the future. And I think in some ways, and you know, maybe I'm just biased because of my job with COVID, but I think in some ways one of the gifts of COVID is we actually have more opportunity to interact, because while people might not schlep to a meeting, they'll go to a Zoom. So like in our listening forums, we actually had some really big turnouts on some of those. So
good.
Oh, and Norma,
I do love that sentence about not blaming, but, you know, that we rebuild. That's a beautiful statement.
I was just going to say that. I think that's such a powerful statement. And I want to, while we're on it, I want to thank Amy for drafting this for us. But, yeah, the statement is, we condemn these incidents, but not the people involved, because the only way to heal is to rebuild together. We pledge to work with the community to address root causes. Well, that's the other part. But yeah, thank you so much, Amy, for that. And Norma, I think you had something. Norma?
Yes, thanks, Chairwoman. I just want to have folks refer to the monthly activity forum. Because of today's speakers, we didn't have time to review the monthly activities, but it is stated that the staff did respond. We've been in contact. Whenever things like this happen, the first thing that I do is I send out letters to the schools and the districts. And we're currently working with Laguna Hills with the help of OC Human Relations Council, because they're holding several listening sessions in the next week or so and facilitate dialogue. So I just invite folks to look at that. Unfortunately, we didn't have time to review it today, but on our end, we were very much responding and being in communication with the schools and districts.
Thank you, Norma, for pointing that out. And then, Jennifer, did you have something?
Yes. Never mind. I do want to appreciate Amy for writing this and always writing us, but I do want to just make a comment. It's not about blaming, it's about keeping people accountable. Accountability, I think, is really key, and because we also have to keep ourselves accountable. I mean, up to this point with this letter, we can count, like, there's a laundry list of things that happened. From New York with Michelle Go to, you know, Texas with the synagogue, with all these incidents, and every single time something came up in the news plan, or I got a message, or whatever it was, I just kept thinking to myself, okay, there's another letter that we need to write. Like, you know, how can we encompass everything that's been happening, right? Because we don't want to seem like we're ignoring, because we're not ignoring. I know none of us are ignoring that. So I just want to just make a comment that we do need to figure out a way to address all these things that are happening across the country, and especially locally, right? Because they're always back in my mind. I mean, Dot, your question was on point. You know, how can we address it? What are we doing? How are we being kept accountable, right? What are the actions that we're taking? And my actions on my end is, when I do hear something, I immediately ask, you know, what's HRC doing? What's normal? Like, what's happening there? Anybody report it? You know, like, do I need to report it, even though it is in the news? You know, what are the next steps? And it is encouraging. I know they're on top of it, but at the same time, I know that, you know what? Another thing happened. There's another incident, and it's ongoing. And I just think somehow these letters, we need to be able to honor those victims and honor what's happening there, but definitely keep those who can make a difference accountable. Because the schools are accountable. The teachers, the administrators, they are accountable what's happening there. I mean, they're supposed to be there playing, enjoying a game, right? I mean, you should be thinking about your prep rally. You should be thinking about where you're going to go afterwards to celebrate if you can. And I think we need to be mindful about that. This is something that they will internalize. No matter how much we try, they will internalize this, and they're going to take it with them when they graduate and they go to the next step, you know, in their education. And I just want to see what is it that we can do to somehow take that burden away somehow from them, maybe even just a little.
Thank you, Jennifer. Very important. Commissioner Faruqi.
Yes, thank you. I just again want to thank Amy and whoever participated in the ad hoc to put this letter together, the draft, a very important meeting to get this and be in more regular communication, like Jennifer has also mentioned. We just don't want to be reactionary, but we need to be there. One thing that I would perhaps recommend or suggest, I know we have mentioned the last paragraph, the hotline and the portal, but with the new initiative that we have, that we are working on, and I was hoping there might be some update, but it's not on the agenda, but Norma just touched upon it a little bit, in the intergroup relations and things. I think that's all leading in that space that we have the new mandate or the budget to work on. So can we interject something here, one liner or two lines, that says that this is something that the commission is doing, that also helps your people to participate, collaborate, or to know. So with this letter going out, and once we approve it, if we can highlight that particular piece, it'll be good. I'm not aware if you can inject that. There is some space, I think, to do so. That will really shed light on what the human relations is actively doing and trying to do. So we bring in people, and even those that unfortunately are victims, what have you, or their families, or in school setting, or whatever that may be. So just because the letter that Felicity read of the NAACP was also very well written. And so thoughts of that kind, but more so, what is it that we are doing, besides what has already been talked about?
Hi everyone, this is Renee.
Hi, Renee.
I'm sorry, I'm in the car. I have a 1 o'clock and I'm meeting with the CEO of real estate that I had to get to, so I did have to jump off of the actual Zoom call. But since we have John here, I think this is a good example that maybe he could walk us through. There was never an ad hoc that was established to facilitate the writing of this letter. It sounds like there was conversation between the last meeting and today where the chair and possibly the EEF, not clearly, because you have to conduct some type of meeting to see HRC business and determine that this letter would be brought to the full HRC for review and approval. So there was no ad hoc that established that. John, now they're trying to approve this. It is on the agenda for today. Is there any issue with that business being done today without previously establishing an ad hoc to provide this effort?
Hi, everyone. Well, the manner in which this draft letter was prepared is still a little bit unclear to me. But there is no prerequisite to form an ad hoc in order to prepare a letter. So if the agenda item says that you will discuss, deliberate, and take action with respect to this letter today, you can do so. If it turns out there was an inadvertent Brown Act violation, and I haven't heard that yet, but that's a problem. If staff drafted this, brought it forward without the ad hoc, that's okay.
John, I think my question really is, it sounds like three members of the commission met to discuss in advance. It wasn't brought forward by one commissioner and asked to be reviewed and approved, proving something, and it's released, that there isn't any issue moving forward.
Remind me, Renee, how many commissioners are there? Is three a quorum?
No, three is not a quorum.
There's 11 commissioners, so six is a quorum.
Right. I'm looking at your agenda. Sorry, just checking it out. Sounds like you're concerned, Renee, and I'm trying to catch up with you to grasp that concern. We have less than a quorum of the commissioners discussing the item. I believe the agenda included this item. I don't have it in front of me now. So
it does.
It does. Okay. Oh, can you better articulate the concern?
The intent of the question is, I just want to ensure that it might be.
You're breaking up, I'm sorry.
The chair, and I'm not sure vice chair or plus spa, talked about this letter outside of a commission meeting and under no ad hoc committee being established. So HRC business was conducted outside of a meeting, outside of an ad hoc, outside of a standing committee. This letter was developed, and now it's being proposed to the entire commission for approval and release.
Yeah. As long as there wasn't a Brown Act violation by more than a quorum discussing a draft, what we seem to have is a draft letter prepared by individual members, less than a quorum, and it's now being presented for consideration, discussion, and potential action on a proper agenda. So
as long as we can confirm that, I don't want to approve something and then not to have them have the ability to release. That's the concern. So maybe it's the commissioners. Could you guys confirm that no more than the quorum talked about this topic outside of a commission meeting?
Yeah, I can confirm. In the discussion, it was Chair Matsuba, Norma, and myself. Commissioner Wang was going to join us and then had a scheduling conflict.
Okay, I think that answers the question.
Yeah, that's great. Those are good facts. So two commissioners with a staff member developing a draft, and that draft is being presented today for discussion in public. That seems okay, Renee.
That's perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Renee, and thank you, John, for clarifying.
Well, I just want to make sure that we're not in a position where we're approving something and then we don't have the ability to release.
No, appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your concern, Renee. And,
thank you.
I was able to jump on the call. Yeah.
Thanks for confirming.
Okay, so any more? Oh, also, Commissioner Faruqi felt you feel that we should add something stating, in other words, what's in progress or what the fact that we have this
yes.
that's been
yes.
approved yes. to work in depth or, I don't
know. Yeah,
what's that, Jennifer? What's that?
I said that actually. I think that's a really great point. We should add that.
Yeah, because that way we are soliciting input, or at least people are aware. We are getting the word out. You know, whoever may see this and read it, that there's an action item or call for action, if I may. So it's more interactive.
Do you have any thoughts on a couple lines that we could add easily?
Perhaps we can lean on Norma, but basically, you know, we can just state that we have recently awarded, the OC Human Relations has been awarded a budget, and we can state the amount and say especially for building capacity, new technology to capture data, information, and response to any hate activity incidences and things of that sort in collaboration and partnership with CBOs and community stakeholders, something to that effect, right? And we solicit, if you need to expand on that, we can say, feel free to share your thoughts and things or whatever that may be. And I do not know what the details are and how we are functioning in this. Hopefully in our next month report, we can get more details as to what the staff is doing and where we are on the milestones that we need to achieve. But as to this letter, at least we cannot insert something that when anybody reads, they say, okay, I didn't know this. Right? So these guys are really going seriously, working on all these areas. So it gives confidence, assurance, building trust. Anybody wants to call and say, how can I help you? Well, here's your chance. You can volunteer to help, right? So that helped.
Norma, you had your hand up.
So, just a couple things. The updates are of regular standing thing on our agenda, but because of today, it was removed because of both of the presentations, which is why I wasn't able to give you an update on where we are in terms of that expansion.
Sure.
I do want to ask Ted, though, in terms of the addition that you're proposing, Commissioner Faruqi, announcing the approval of the funding, there was something, and that's why I'm asking Ted, there was something around putting out any type of PRPs regarding that funding, and I don't want us to get in trouble.
Okay.
At any point in being able to put that out, of how much of that we can share in this PRP. The other thing for me is just because I'm with that expansion, we're looking to have certain things in place. For example, our database, our hotline, our referral network by April, and hoping that we can introduce that to the world in April. I don't know if it'll cause confusion putting stuff out when it's not ready for us to say, yeah, call this number, yes, go here. I don't want to cause any type of confusion among the masses around, yeah, we have this thing coming. And then they're like, wait, where is it? What do you mean? It's not ready yet. So that's the other concern that comes up for me. But yeah. Ted, if you can help me out here, I appreciate that.
Sure thing. I don't know if I formally introduce myself. My name is Ted Knapp. I'm the Government Affairs Manager for OCCR. I was appointed the project manager for the county for the anti-hate expansion program. So I'm working with Norma in managing this program, or at least that contract, rather. With regard to, Norma, I think you're referring to the county branding requirements. So in our contract, there's a section in the contract under Section 33 county branding requirements. So anything regarding publicity, literature, advertisement, and social media, there's a clause in there that states that the project manager, being myself or the county in general, we have to get written approval of the content and the publication of the information at least 5 days prior to the publishing, unless a different time frame for approval is agreed upon between the project managers, being me and Norma. So that's been in the agreement since we executed. I would venture to say it's probably in all of the agreements, but that's right now, that is what's in place. But like I said, it does say unless a different time frame is approved of between the managers.
Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that and introducing yourself. My only thing is, I mean, we don't need to expand and say we got $1 million and we're trying to do a PR pitch. And to Norma's thing, you know, if you're not ready, we don't want to open the door and have more questions asked. So that was not the intent, at least, you know. But if it makes sense, if it doesn't, we just leave it, right? Because all we are saying here is, while we are working, we are also working on something. You know, or we are in the process of, or some, you know, without having a definitive thing, but the, I don't know, the word awarded can be said, or the hate crime prevention initiative the human relations is working on, and there'll be more information coming forth, something like that. At least it kind of throws. But if that means it's a PR pitch, this, that, then forget it, we drop it and don't need to do anything.
May I just, okay.
Mute.
putting some of that in there, Fareed, kind of gives me a little bit of heartburn, just having worked with media and PR and that type of thing. But I don't want it to take away from the bigger message. And that is, you know, what Amy has written here as far as the hate and the abuse and the bullying and that type of thing of our young people. But I am wondering, oh, may I see that one more time? I was still looking at that. In that last graph, I am wondering if we can reiterate by, instead of saying call our confidential hotline, to put in there, please call the Orange County Human Relations Hotline or our online portal. That gives us one more time that our name is there, but it's not, it's more informational than it is PR, but it does get our name one more time in there. And raising that awareness that there is an agency such as ours that has a phone number and a portal. I feel like that's important information. And then down the road, once things are in place, as Norma referred to, I would hope that the county supervisors and our group and whatever could do a collaborative. And I don't know, Ted, if that's possible, but if there could ever be a collaborative announcement that things are expanding with the commission and that more is being done. Again, raising awareness in both an educational and informative way.
I should probably clarify, so when I cite the contract for the 5 days, I don't mean to say that in a way of stonewalling any of your efforts. My job is to make sure that you're successful, everything that you want to do is successful. It's just to make sure there's a meeting of the mind so that we don't have any issues later. So if there's anything that, like a collaboration, as long as we're meeting all of the Brown Act elements, and which I hate to bring that up again, I apologize, but as long as we're meeting that, I'm working in conjunction with Norma, and we're meeting with, you know, Renee and everyone else, I think that I'm on board to help you do that any way I can.
Thank you.
So, Dot, you're suggesting we change that to please call the HR confidential help.
Yeah, and I mean, again, in my mind, that's informative, it's educational, and it does not necessarily disrupt or take away from the message of what we're standing for in the prior drafts.
I think that sounds appropriate. Anyone else? You have comments on that? I've added changing that wording a little bit at the end. It certainly adds visibility, and as you said, lets people know we're out here and we, you know, there are things being done. Anyone? So, okay. So, Norma, can you change that on there?
I will change it. This is a PDF copy, so I'll change it.
Oh, okay.
To clarify what the commission is voting on is to put out the statement under the OC Human Relations letterhead. So that hasn't been done yet, right, Jamie?
Oh, that's right.
Right.
Okay. All right. So we need to vote on it?
Yes.
All right. Let's do this. Do we need a motion to vote on it?
Yes.
Oh, can someone make a motion that we have a vote?
I move to approve.
I make a motion.
Okay. All right. Well, Dot and then Jennifer, are you seconding?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I will do the roll call. Okay, Commissioner Briseño?
Yes.
Commissioner Buck?
Yes.
Commissioner Dobie?
Yes.
Commissioner Faruqi?
Yes.
Commissioner Kent? I think we lost him. Commissioner Leach?
Yes.
Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Commissioner Matsuba?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Neill? Commissioner Steinberg?
Yes.
And Commissioner Wang?
Yes.
Okay. It is approved.
Okay. Oh. Okay. All right. Moving to
announcements.
The next item. Announcements. Okay. Announcements?
I just want to remind the February 23rd.
Go ahead.
So the Hearing from Hate film screening that's coming up, unless I'm taking away knees, I don't want to take her position away if she's going to comment on it, but I'm just looking at the last page to the attachment. So 5 to 8 p.m. February 23rd, 23. Healing from Hate film screening that's going to take place, and I know I'm going to be there, but just want to remind the commission, and we pass the word around to others as well.
Absolutely, and you do have to register for it in advance.
Yes.
So, to get the code and everything. And on Tuesday I will be interviewed by Dawn Camper at UCI Impact OC. She has a radio station, Impact OC, and I did speak with her, and she said she'll send me a link of how to hear it. She has a podcast, but she'll send me the link, and then I'll pass it on to be sent out.
Europe.
Anyone else? Ready to go? It's 1:02, and I would like to officially adjourn our meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.